Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 147. This is a show about Linux. We cover all sorts of Linux topics, whether it be software, hardware, or just general news. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am glad to be podcasting with my good friend once again, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. the Linux Maven. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Cody. All in all, I'd say going good enough. It's been a while since I've had a chance to chat with you, man. How is life going?
Much better now. I'll say that.
Good, good.
Just, you have things come up with family and other things, and I did. And luckily, not only do I have you as a good resource and friend to understand when those times come up and give me the time and space I need, but several of our listeners contacted me after kind of getting the gist of what was going on, and I thank all of them for their support. But no, I'm doing well, good state of mind. No one passed away. No one's dead. Everything's fine. I'm still fully employed. Just, you know, life got a little too busy and I didn't have time for basically anything but sleep and very little else. So
good. Cause I was scared there for a second because, a good friend, I say a friend of mine published on Google Plus yesterday that his father died, and my wife got a call yesterday that her aunt died. So I was afraid you were going to insinuate there was a number three that I didn't know about. So good.
Oh yeah. They do come in threes.
Yeah.
But yes. Enough about me, Door. How about, I haven't had a chance to talk to you, especially online lately. How the heck have you been, man?
Busy. I mean, I personally believe it's better to be busy than not to be busy. My brain is fried, so I don't know how long it's, I don't know how much has changed since we've done a show, me and you together, but I believe since then we have two added shows to the network.
That's correct.
So I thought, first is Podnuts Meetup, which is open forum. Anyone can come on at any point in time and talk about anything Podnuts related. We also stole a part from Lennox Cranks, a little bit of an old podcast that had one really great feature where they would boot people. Well, we took it and twisted it where we give one person every episode the hammer where they can boot anyone. But we have specific sets of reasons, typically, like bad audio, cussing. If you're a really good friend of the network and you come on and cuss, we'll give you one pass. I'm not going to lie. Nothing is completely black and white. Or if you come on and you want to talk about big game hunting or NASCAR, that is one surefire way to get booted. But for the most part, we just talk about anything that comes up, anything comes to mind, anything we heard about during the week. And then we have Call That Girl remote support show. Lisa Henriksen, been on the network more than a couple times talking about her remote support business. So now she has a show where she's basically going into some detail about her daily routines, things she's learned that worked, things that she has learned that doesn't work. Basically just, telling everybody what she knows.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I'm a fan of Lisa's. Back when I was just a listener, when starting on my computer business, I listened to her Podnuts Daily episodes over and over again, because on top of, her technical ability and her business savvy, her customer service was also really good. She went above and beyond. In several instances, learned some good lessons and was able to pass those on through the episode, through her ebooks, and now she has a show on the network. So if you're interested at all, and it's with her personally, like I said, she touches on a variety of topics. So just don't think that it's just a remote support show. Even if you never do remote support and you do any computer repair, you're still going to get a lot out of it. So definitely check it out.
Absolutely. She does have a special link. I want to say it's callthatgirl.biz/podnuts, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah, we'll find it and put it in the show notes. Very cool. Okay. Well, Dor knew this, I guess, for a while, but I didn't until today. For those of you who don't know, all of the Ohio Linux Fest 2013 talks are actually posted on archive.org as of now. And we're talking just, what, 35 days later?
Sounds right. Yeah, it's good man.
Yeah, which is unheard of for that fest in particular. I know that they've gone years without posting any content, or any content that was posted by audience members in the crowds recording themselves and putting it up. So to see them turn it around, I mean, is fantastic. Because for those of you who didn't go to the event, which I am unfortunately this year one of those people, I now get to at least have the content, whatever kind of quality it's in. There are some talks that I definitely didn't want to miss, and now I have the chance to get caught up on the content. So there will be a link in the show notes for that. Dor, have you had a chance to listen to anything other than the ones that you yourself went to while you were there in Ohio?
No. I literally got an email from a guy earlier today that was asking about slides and possible video from the fest. And I was replying to him saying, no, I'm not sure of any plans on releasing extra content, but I know the audio will be posted at, then I alt and tabbed, went to archive.org, search for Ohio space Linux Fest, all one word, 2013, hit enter. I saw one entry. I said, I'm not supposed to get an entry, because I was going to take that search string and put it in the email and say, it will be posted here when it does get posted. I saw a link and I said, I'm not supposed to see a link. I click on the link and everything's up there. So I literally found out like 2 hours ago.
Well, you're still ahead of me, so I'll give you credit for that. That's great. But yeah, the link will be in the show notes, guys. Go check it out. Lots of good talks that I probably wouldn't have missed if I was there anyway. But the fact that they were recorded and put up so quick is great. And I think Fest should do that more, you know?
Well, I'll say the only Fest I know that's done it quicker is Nelf. Not last year, the year before, he literally had everything posted in less than, I think it was, 96 hours. But most of the time, Fest takes at least 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. But to Bruce Patterson's credit, last year, we literally hadn't even put all the tables and cables away yet, and he held up a series of discs in his hand with a gleeful smile, and he said, here's all the talks right here, fellas.
Yeah.
Here they are.
Bruce's, James Brown was the hardest working man in show business. I seriously am starting to believe Bruce is the hardest working man in conference history. Blind, utterly blind, tenacious dedication is the best way I can describe Bruce.
Yep. And a heck of a nice guy. A lot of good stories, too.
Absolutely. He's the guy I want to pull by his hair to go to lunch with to just chat.
Without spoiling it, we should have him on the show to tell this story. But he told a great story about a homeless man and a dumpster full of books.
Yes, how now Boston has the smartest homeless people in the world.
Right. But for the details, we'll have to bring him on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, guys, since this is guys and girls, female listeners, of course, too. You know who you are. Ashley Anderson is one I'm thinking of. I had to say that. We obviously haven't done a show together in a while, and you guys just keep throwing correspondence at our faces, and we have responded to some individually. We haven't others. So if we did all of it right now, we'd be here for 5 hours, and unfortunately, we can't do that. We'll get through them all eventually, just like we do now, but we do have some voicemails we're going to get through and some emails today to just kind of get caught up.
Right, and I'll say we're not going to start a second show just to have double the sponsorship. I mean, answer all the emails like some other shows. Wait a minute, we don't really go for sponsorship. We kind of let the people support us who want to support us, right?
But what we could do is we could record 7 micro episodes and have them on separate pages in an article, and that way they could click through and we could have different ads on them and get revenue that way. You know, from companies that support us, you know, like that underwear company, that juice company, that that offsite backup company, you know, all of those companies.
Yep, because there's so many ads on podnest.com. Yeah, that's one of the things when people ask me, so how do you feel about Adblock Plus? And I'm like, I don't care. They say, why? I say, because if you go to podnos.com, turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off, you'll notice there's no difference.
Yep. I haven't got a single pop-up on Podnuts, and I doubt I ever will.
Well, if you do, I'm sure your computer was infected on the page you just left from.
Okay.
I'll say that. Yeah, I think one of the first things we wanted to do was we wanted to go over a Ken Fallon voicemail.
Yes.
And I'll say the first thing, one of the first things Ken Fallon does in this voicemail is apologize. And I will say this. Never apologize for asking questions. If you do not ask questions, you will never get any answers. And I'm never above someone questioning me or what I'm doing or how I'm doing stuff. Everything is open for discussion. My wife tried to make a joke today when I said, I didn't know. And she said, oh my God, I got to get on my camera and I got to record this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And like 30 times a day, I say, I don't know. And then she's like, you never say, I don't know. I said, sure I do. When you say, what do you want for dinner? I don't know. Do you want to go out for dinner? I don't know. You know, I say it plenty of times, and I'll say everything Ken is about to say, I really want people to listen to. First and foremost, he is a friend of the network. Secondly, he is maybe the second hardest working guy on the internet that I know. And he'll say he isn't, but he is the backbone of HPR, Hacker Public Radio. If he wasn't there doing what he did, I'm honestly getting ready to say, I think Hacker Public Radio might have died like a year and a half ago. Thanks to him, it's alive, it's up, it's running, it's kicking, and it's actually doing pretty good right now.
Good. Yeah, they've been posting a lot of good shows lately. I'm thinking back of some gems the last few months. Because you know how it is with different feeds, especially ones where you have listener contributions. It can be hit or miss, but whoever's posting the episodes go out of their way to also in the description of the episode let you know what kind of content you're kind of getting into. And you have stumbled upon some great ones lately.
Yeah, and I'll say the whole genesis of this voicemail was because he sent a really long email, and he sent it at a time I was actually caught up on my email. And I saw the email. I opened up the email. I said, whoa. I replied immediately and said, Ken, this looks a little long. I'm at work right now. When I get some quiet time, I will sit down and read it. And then he replied back like 10 minutes later and said, I'll just record you some audio because I know I forgot you don't read big emails. I was like, oh, right. Well, if you want to, you can. Mm-hmm. So he sent us this voicemail. If you're ready.
I totally am.
Hi, Doran and Cody. This is feedback from Ken Fallon. As you guys know, I'm an avid follower of your podcast, so please take this in the constructive nature that it's intended. I was prompted to write when I heard some podcasters mention that you were worrying that you were not worrying about security and that you were a Linux expert, and if you were not worried, then they should not be worried. Therefore, this is specifically not about the Hand of Thief, which you mentioned a lot in the last show, but more my observations on the attitude to security over the entire time I've been listening to the show. First of all, here's a link to the RSA breakdown on the Hand of Thief. Link will be in the show notes. You're probably correct about the hype related to Hand of Thief, but you should not underestimate the risk to the users. The analysis of the code shows that it works on every distro except Ubuntu. This proves that Linux is vulnerable to this type of attack. The code itself is buggy and it does not run well, but the command and control channel remained open on all distributions, even Ubuntu, thus allowing the botmaster to update this software to fix the issues that they had. The software itself is showing some alarming features, such as the ability to detect a VM or whether to identify if Wireshark is running. You mentioned that the steps that would be needed to get it installed were convoluted, but you should be aware that the writer did not, as they typically do not, provide a deployment path, as this is sold as a separate service. Of course, there are many ways to deploy viruses, or as we know them in the Linux community, as rootkits. There are literally hundreds of them out there, I believe. So someone could deploy Hand of Thief using one of those methods, and therefore the install arguments are moot. The developer as well also mentioned that he is working on a drive-by method of installing it under Linux. However, the RSA people believe, given the buggy nature of how it's working, that isn't too big a threat. However, We, as a community, don't appreciate when people spread negative FUD about Linux, and therefore we should stop spreading unfud that Linux is more secure than other operating systems. And I include a link to the list of Linux vulnerabilities and their severity. But all that aside, it only takes one vulnerability to expose your system to an exploit. And I would not like to be the one who exposes listeners to missing bank details or deleted family photos, both of which examples can be found on the internet. It's happening to people on Linux. As it stands now, many security analysts rate the security of the operating system of Windows 7 and Windows 8 on a par or even superior to modern Linux distros. For example, and I link to the Wikipedia article on address space layout renderization. In my own personal opinion, I feel the most important difference between the two approaches is that Microsoft developers have had mandatory training for the last 5 years on programming securely. On our side, Linus takes a completely different approach and is often hostile towards security, treating everything as a bug, which I guess at the end of the day results in the same thing. Anyway, regardless, the majority of Windows exploits are now done via third-party software or via the web browser, and this is also a valid exploit vector on Linux. The reason Linux has been such an unfruitful target so far is that traditional Linux users have been more technical and more experienced about protecting their systems. As a Linux educator, you have a duty to inform your listeners when there is FUD and hype, but you also have a duty to educate them about security. If you do not know how, or you're not up to speed enough about it, get somebody on who knows the topic well, or point them to some good security podcasts. From now on, I would appreciate it if you started to strongly recommend good security practices to your listeners. We all have a duty to keep our reputation as a difficult platform to exploit intact. The tools are there, you just need to use them. For example, never run as root, always require a password for sudo. Monitor your log files. There's a nice program called LogWatch that you can install that will send you an email every day of everything that's happening on your system. Disable nodev, no sudo ID, and no exec on temp, and symlink your downloads to there. That way, even if they will never be able to run anything from that location. I can also include a link in the show notes. Only load applications from trusted sources. That means use your package repositories. Don't go adding random PPAs or downloading random files or random tar files from places unless you trust the security of it. Enable your firewall. If you don't know which distro to pick, it comes default on Fedora. Use full disk encryption. This is an option on install. There's no excuse for not using it. You will get a minor disadvantage in performance, but to be brutally honest, I have been running it for 5 years and I've seen no significant difference. Use wget on suspect sites. Download the index, download the index.html, look, see what's going on in there. Then always run Firefox using JavaScript disabled, using NoScript, with Adblock installed and with request policy extensions. This makes it very difficult to exploit the browser. You have then the option to whitelist certain sites, but be careful about the length of which you use whitelisting. When you're browsing on forums, always check the commands before you run them. For example, it was considered funny to put rmmenrf on forums as just type this and it'll fix all your problems. Go on to the command line and type man, M-A-N for manual, space, and the command, and then look for the options. If you don't know, paste the command into Google and see what happens. If you don't know, come on to IRC Oddcast Planet and ask there. Update your system regularly. Always update your system regularly unless you're using Debian SID, in which case, which is unstable. Don't update over the weekend. Always update on a Tuesday or Wednesday because most of the development's done at the weekend. Run a modern distribution. This is advice that you have heard here on this show to run a distribution from 2.5 years ago. That is not good advice. The kernel patches are out of date. Firefox is out of date and exploitable. So they may not be able to run anything in your machine, but they will be able to get your bank details. Do not do that, folks. Run a modern distribution designed for old hardware. If you have old hardware, there's no excuse. include a link in the show notes to the DistroWatch special section on old computers. I myself ran this on a terminal desktop with 512K of RAM. There's a link on my website about this. Some of these distros absolutely scream on such minuscule hardware. Furthermore, disable any unneeded services on your machine. Turn off Bonjour that announces everything to your network. Turn off UPnP. Turn off additional file shares. Turn off Bluetooth. Turn off anything you don't know. If you have a home network, manage that home network. Get a label printer, print out the IP address for every device and stick it on it. Know where it is, maintain a host file and copy that around. There is no reason that random devices should be joining your network without you being aware of it. UPnP, disable that protocol as it has the ability to modify rules on your firewall to allow traffic out and in. Bonjour announces all the services that are on your machine to everybody else on the network. People would say user-friendly, but I would say idiotic things that are available on your computer. Finally, the last three tips is, number one, you're doing it already, learn. Learn as much as you can about this. Don't be afraid to ask questions. There are no stupid questions. Well, if you keep asking the same thing several times, then you should get the pen and paper and write them down. But that's besides the point. Last three things, learn. Think about what you're doing. Just don't randomly throw in stuff onto the computer. That's fine if you're just got a machine and you're a virtual machine and you're just trying stuff out. That's fine. Your own computer, think about what you're doing. And finally, remain vigilant. Read about security stuff that's going on. Pay attention. Avoid dodgy sites. And finally, don't hit me, Dor, for sending in this feedback. It is not a criticism really as such, but we can't let the guard down. Everybody, we have to maintain level of security so that we do not become a target. With that, I'll hand you back to Dor and Cody. Both of you guys are doing great work. Keep up the good work.
Okay, well, thank you, Ken, for sending that in. Dor, do you want to unload on him first, or should I?
Well, first off, I want to say, virtually everything he said makes sense.
Yes.
Obviously makes sense. Ken is a very smart fellow. But for instance, if you run a complete Linux house like mine, turning on or off UPnP is pointless. Turning on a software firewall is pointless. Doing all that kind of stuff is, in a large sense, pointless. Because if it's already on your network, it's done. It's over. They already won. One of the points being, you have to know when to, when not to trust your network. I have complete faith in my network. I will say I am also the guy begging and pleading to a higher power, if one exists, let me get infected. I want to see what an infection on Linux is like. I never called myself an expert. If someone else calls me an expert, I cannot change their perception on what they say. I attest multiple times over again, I am nothing more than at the best case, an advanced noob. I'll also say, no one can expect every computer user to basically be a complete administrator. And that was kind of what he said at the end. Like, every user's not going to go to security places and look up security information and keep track of security stuff because they don't want to do that. And to be quite honest, I don't know of a single good security podcast because basically every good security podcast I know sounds audio quality wise like complete garbage. If anyone out there knows of a security podcast that doesn't sound like complete garbage with hisses and statics and burps and clicking on keyboards and stuff like that, then please let me know. But everyone I know sounds like garbage. Don't say security now, because that's really not a security podcast. That's a best practices, ideology, basics of encryption podcast. That's not active everyday security. And I'll say this, Ken did almost get a little bit mad at me because my reply back to him was, I said, you know what, Ken, what you said was very smart. had a lot of really good information in it. Sounds to me like you need to do a HPR episode on it. And he was like, oh, I curse you. I can't believe you said that. So I honestly hope he does. I don't speak on security because I do not know security. I do not speak on things I do not know of. That's the surefire way to sound stupid and look stupid. While I'm sure I look stupid, I don't purposely go out of my way to look stupid. Right now, today, okay, rootkits do exist. You cannot get infected right now that I know of on a Linux distribution with the rootkits because they've already been patched against them. Hand of Day Thief was basically proven by RSA, the company who does all the research after the fact, like weeks later, after Ken sent this in, that it's not viable as malware. I.e., you can't, it's not doable, okay? Of course the system is infectable. Of course the operating system is not perfect. There is no such thing as a perfect operating system, which is why if you want to get in a career in computers, get into security, it's only going to get bigger and more important. But as of right now today, we in the Linux universe do not get infected. With that said, I understand him wanting users to be prepared so when that day comes, we are ready to handle it. When it comes to my personal computers, it's too easy for me to nuke and pave and start over and then start to pay attention to security because it really isn't hard like he kind of said. So right now, the way I run my computers, it's like a butt naked person running down the beach. And that's just me. That's my personal way that I choose to run my computers. I don't tell people that's how they should run their computers. And if I insinuated that in the past or anyone thought that, I am sorry.
Well, you make a lot of good points there. And to be fair, so does he and Ken. I would never unload on you. The fact that you apologized ahead of your comments only shows how much you respect not only our listeners, but the show and us. So we do appreciate that. But ultimately, what he was saying and what kind of in a nutshell is, you know what, and something you touched on too, be ready for that day and don't assume that it will never come.
Oh, it's going to come.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's inevitable. And when Dor was commenting on it, I don't remember him coming off as maybe like an elitist or as I know everything and it's fine, just dismiss it. But on that same token, When I initially read that too, I kind of blew it off but mainly because of the source that posted the article. It was, I don't know if it was, it was just some tech site that I don't trust. I saw that and I was like, yeah, whatever. But then it turned out to be like a whole big thing reported on many other different places. And then, Dor and I talked about it. It seemed lent a little bit more legitimacy, but I can't remember what his term was for unfud. I think it was unfud or anti-fud. But
right,
yeah, when it's easy for us to dismiss fud because it's thrown at us all the time, and it has been for years. And Linux has been dismissed as a platform. And look at all that. I mean, look 18 months ago. What's happened? I mean, as far as you're talking about, video production, audio production has gotten better, gaming. So with more people coming to the platform, it's going to be a more viable target to those people who want to exploit it.
Exactly. The best and maybe worst things to ever happen to Linux in hindsight could be SteamOS.
But at the same time, it's like, I can't remember who told me this, if I was having an argument with somebody, but Think of it as a fence. Like let's say you didn't know how to build a fence and you hired someone to build the fence. Not to show you how to build a fence, but to build it for you. And then the person who built it for you said, it's 100% secure, it's great. Until the day that person, you've wronged them and they want to get in the fence. And then they sell the plans on how to build the fence or how to take the fence apart to somebody else. Right. So nothing is completely secure unless you know it inside and out and you know how to do it yourself. And it sounds, and Ken, I'm not afraid of big emails. I read over that when you initially sent it, and a lot of good stuff there. When I see a thing like that, it's like a challenge. Like, I go get a cup of coffee, I sit down, or a couple beers, whatever, you know.
Right. Well, and I'll say this. I'm going to throw this out there publicly, and I'm sorry if he didn't like this, but I would literally be willing to basically pay Ken Fallon money if once a week I could sit with him and record audio, nudge, nudge, about security-related stuff, because I don't know it, okay? The example is Windows 95. When the Windows 95 was out, I could open up the file manager, I could browse the entire file system, and I knew when a file didn't belong there. I knew to delete it because I intimately knew the operating system. I ain't going to lie. There are still folders in Linux. Well, I'm like, hey, how long has that folder been there? You know, and it's like news to me kind of thing, because I purposely don't go out of my way to dig incessantly through the file system. I look at it, I browse it. Of course, I went through it before, but I don't have to go through it a lot, so I don't really know it. I wish dearly there was a, okay, I'm going to throw this out there because I don't care. Security Now. Great podcast for what it is. No matter how flighty Gibson is, he is beyond smart.
I love that show, if nothing more than for the sci-fi and fantasy Audible book reviews. I mean,
right.
That's where I get those week in and week out.
Yeah. And I'll say I had the idea well in excess of a year ago to have a podcast called Security How. You know, maybe get some typos over to our site too as well. But the point of it was supposed to be one or two security, heavy security in enthusiast with one security noob on the show, and they would go over how you can secure yourself, what are some recent exploits that happen, how can people be affected by them, how to know when you get them, because that's a never-ending flood of content. I'll just say it hasn't come to fruition yet, obviously, because it's not on the network, but I will say Ken Fallon is the kind of guy who gives me the impression he has the ability to communicate those types of topics to people who want to learn those kind of topics. Because like I said, I don't know of a good security podcast. I've never heard of a good actual hands-on security, not let's look at security, but actually hands-on security podcast ever. They all just sound like a drunken fourth grader recorded them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to call him out, because I know what it's like to be busy and then have other sort of projects thrown before you. But if he ever wants to come on, I'm sure any one of the shows, I'm sure you could always make time for him. He does live in the UK, correct?
I don't care. I don't care. I'll stay up till 3 a.m. if it meant I could actually chat with Ken. And I'll say this, he's not the only smart guy out there. There are plenty of other people who know and understand security much, much, much greater than I. And they also understand basic operating systems, whether it be Windows, Mac, or Linux. And they could basically communicate these kinds of things, like Ken was saying, reasons why, and then the technical, here's how you do it. You just drop to the command line, you just type this, and then you hit yes, and this 10 minutes worth of conversation, here's how to turn it on in like 3 seconds. You know, I just don't know it. I know there's a firewall on Linux. I know every time it's enabled, I literally have a cow and I disable it right away, because I want to be able to connect to my computers from other computers without barriers.
Right, right.
But, you know, that's how I roll. I got at least 10 ports open on that puppy over there on my public side for 10 years straight, I'll say. 12 years straight, something like that.
Well, let's fill them.
Well, you know, I'll just say, I don't think that I'm lucky in the sense that I've never gotten bit on Linux whatsoever. The only thing in the real world that existed that I know of, and this is just, you know, this might be my incompetence, my ignorance, the only thing I know of within the last 6 years that was actually real was someone was able to upload a screensaver to gnome-look.org, where when you installed it, Yeah, it asked for super user privileges. And if it did get super user privileges, I want to say what it did was it modified your host file and changed your local DNS settings. So instead of going to Google, you would go to, you know, whatever. Right. And that was the only thing I can remember. Here's an example of a new thing on Windows. Okay, if we had this kind of thing on Linux, trust me, I'd be paranoid. You get infected, okay? What it does, you know, everyone's heard of the FBI ransomware stuff, okay? Mm-hmm. That basically locks your computer and says, if you want your computer back, you got to send us money. Okay, no. First off, there's a new iteration of it, literally brand kind of new. A, it will also accept Bitcoin. So that shows you how serious these people are. But two, it will literally encrypt your documents and settings folder and your My Documents folder. It will encrypt them with a key that you can only get if you pay them $300. Now, we all know when encryption is done right, there is no breaking it. Well, the bad guys are doing it right. So technically, you cannot break it. You have to pay them the money to get your files back. Which makes backing up more of a thing to do on Windows, but now they do have a Windows app you can install pre-infection that will keep that infection from encrypting everything. But if we had something like that attacking Linux, trust me, Ken, I would be freaking out. I would literally, half of this show would be dedicated towards security and isolation. And on Windows, it was called sandboxing. On Linux, I want to say it's called, on BSD, it's called jails.
Yep.
I can't remember what it's called on Linux.
I believe it's the Penguin Prison. No, is that not right?
I don't know. It could be.
I would be awful on Family Feud.
Like I said, I don't know security, so I don't know.
Right. Well, yeah, Ken.
But yes, Ken, please keep it coming. Never apologize for questioning something I do, but I will say, if you hear someone call me an expert, Ken, smack them, okay? I am not an expert. I'm a guy who talks a lot.
Okay, you're an expert beard grower.
Well, it keeps coming and going, so I'm very well versed in that behavior.
You see this fuzz I have going on? I didn't even have this until I met you. Thank you.
It's spreading.
I know. Yeah.
But like, I never, ever, even on the professional podcasting talk, I never said I was an expert. And I feel pretty dang confident in that aspect of what I'm doing. I still don't consider myself even more than a beginning mid-grade. Because someone like Klaatu and someone who actually does this for a living makes me look like a grain of sand on a beach compared to them. Because I really don't know everything. What I know, I think I'm able to convey well. And that's why I think what my thing is.
Yeah. But, Ken, thank you for the email. And here's the thing. As he's going down that list, I've heard those things mentioned and other resources, whether it be, you know, how to secure your system, you know, top 10 lists or other podcasts, this and that. I'm like, yeah, I should have done that a while ago. Yep, I haven't, but I haven't done almost any of them. So to have it in one concise text document, we will have all those in the show notes. To sort of end this up, what you were talking about, your systems are like a naked person running on the beach. Let me try to assimilate that in my mind, too. You don't have anything on there that you couldn't, like, lose and then immediately just reinstall, right? It's more of, I consider it like you're driving your car around, but you're not keeping a lot of stuff in the trunk and the cab.
Right. Well, yes. And everything that is on my machine that I need, like AKA Raw Podcast, I have bit synced to multiple machines on multiple continents. And I also have batch processing take in two places that I control, taking the data off that BitTorrent sync and one way copying it off to a different drive. So I have everything I need. I have to have backed up in multiple places, multiple continents, multiple methods, and multiple medias.
Right.
Which means, yes, this OS could blow up, and I wouldn't care. And I'll say this. On this computer, I have not applied a patch in a month. On this computer, I have not applied a patch in 5 months. Why? I really enjoy how my computers are running right now. I will apply patches, just not right now. And this is a purely ridiculous, worthless cop-out excuse I'm going to give. I need this computer sometimes 6 nights a week to work perfect for doing live podcast. I need this computer to run perfect because that's my main media server, aka for the wife, and my main backup machine rig. So if one of these two has issues, I suffer the consequences. So once every, typically month, I'll go through and I'll update them both, but I've been a little busy to do it. So Ken, if you want to, I'll give you SSH keys you can remote and you can perform all the updates, but if something breaks, I'm going to, I don't know, send you some bad beer.
We'll just blame HPR.
No, I can't blame HPR. I like HPR too much. I'll blame 5150. I can do that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay. Well, quite a bit of content there. Thank you again, Ken. And for those of you listening, please check out those show notes. We're going to do a few emails here from some good people who wrote in.
Very cool.
Let's see here. Charles sent a message into podness.com/contact. He says, "Hello, Cody and Dor. First of all, I wish to thank you for all the great tips and software recommendations. It has made my life easier. Next, a conversion story. My niece just started working for our family business. She asked me about working on her desktop to get it working again. A quick look found it had been infested with Vista Home Starter and 2 pounds of cat hair. After removing the cat hair, I reformatted the drive and installed Mint 15. She took to it easily and never looked back. Shortly after that, she acquired a Gateway 1410 netbook with a Windows 7 starter installed. I immediately dual-booted it with Mint 15, and she only uses Windows for iTunes. Although she used to have an iPhone, she now has a Razer Max and uses it with Mint easily. Another young person saved from the evil clutches of Microsoft. Thanks for the work you do, Charles." Well, thank you, Charles.
Very cool. I will say, one of the full-time jobs, I think, is, I don't want to say converting people, because that implies you're going out of your way, like thumping on your stack of CDs about why people should. I'll say holding people's hands in the conversion process is a full-time job. When people have that time to do it, I personally, on behalf of the Linux community, cannot thank them enough, because I know that's a task. It really is a task, or can be.
And a side note, let's just say for whatever reason, you're building a system for someone that does have pets, whether it be cats or dogs or like a lot of gerbils or whatever. There's a lot of pet hair around. Or let's say that they work in a salon, which we've had, you know, people do. I remember hearing Podness Daily people doing repairs for a laptop by a salon owner. But let's just say you're building a PC for this person. There are some great cases. I cannot remember the manufacturer right now, but I've seen this implemented several where, you know, that for proper airflow, you want the intake in the front. So you basically, and this is going to sound dirty, but you want the air to be sucked in the front and then blown out the back to create, you know, a flow of air, not just a bunch of air being sucked into the case and not just air being blown out of the case, right? So if you do have air being sucked in from the front, you can get these cases with these foam inserts over the fans to where no actual physical particles of anything will be sucked into the case. And then the hair might collect on that, but it's just an easy, you know, scrape or, you know, pull it out and, you know, bang it on the counter or whatever. But for any of you who have opened up those old cases, I mean, just seeing, you know, dust and, you know, debris and dirt over years, you know, that's bad enough. But if you've ever seen one with just a ton of cat hair, I mean, that's literally a fire hazard if it starts getting into the fans, if it starts getting into, like, you know, the different heat sink areas, and coupled with, you know, tar from smokers, you know, that stuff becomes very sticky. And yeah, you're talking major fire hazard. So just a tip there. But yeah, I always, oh man, that reminds me of a job I did. Yeah, the whole family, all they had was HP stuff, and they only had Windows 7 starter on everything. And of course, you know, the teenage boy had some questionable material, wink, wink, on his on his laptop, and it was just completely loaded up. And then dad, the same thing. Mom, the same thing. All different types of stuff. And I just, I suggested Linux on one box. One person in the family took to it. The other two thought that that person was crazy, and now they all run Linux. So yeah, it on top of being a good alternative to Vista, it can save families.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say I do have one computer upstairs where I have that. And all it is thin, maybe 16th of an inch foam that goes between the fan and the case with like a little grate on both sides. I have one of them upstairs and I love it because that's a computer I know I can keep lower to the ground because all my other computers, I want at least 8 inches off the ground. And then just every 6 months or so, pull it out, shake it off, wash it off, dry it off, put it back in, good as gold.
Yep. Think of it like the little catch-all screen in like one of those air conditioner like window box units.
Yes.
It's not something that you need to disassemble. It's literally just a couple little clip things. You'd pull the entire screen out, just go like what Dor said, run it through some hot water, rinse it off, dry it off, put it right back in, good as new. So thank you, Charles, for sending that in. I don't suggest Linux to people anymore that aren't friends or family, because it seems to me that those are the people that are coming to you for genuine help, who you're probably not charging anyway, so it doesn't hurt you to get them on a better platform. Or, and I mean, Linux might not be a better platform for them, but a platform that will meet their needs. So, yeah. All right. See here. Teddy K wrote in. He said, "Dor, I have Ubuntu 12.xx server and would like to put a TV tuner card in it. Then I would like to have computers on the network with Windows 7 Media Center. Excuse me. Then I would like to have computers on the network with Windows 7 Media Center use that tuner. Is this possible? If so, the more detailed the directions, the better." And Teddy, that's it.
If I get what he's saying correctly, the closest he can get to this is like Myth TV, which basically means you have front ends and back ends. You have a back end computer running as the engine. You have a front end computer acting as the interface to the end user. I don't know of any interface on Windows that supports this type of functionality. I'll say he could run Linux in a VM, he could run Myth TV on a boot disk probably and boot to it, but I could not think of anything, because Windows isn't like this. What he's talking about is basically free, hassle-free distribution of media. Microsoft Windows, Apple is all about DRMing content and isolating content and restricting content. To be honest, that's the truth. I mean, that's what it is. I don't know of any way you can do this. Now, say I'm not the big media guy either. Everyone I know, I can think of, though, they would suggest Myth TV if you want remote tuner controls and capabilities. I know Windows 8, Media Edition is now not really the case. They have plugins. No, that was for Windows 7. Plugins for Windows 7 that you could buy that they were expecting it would cost $99 for this bundle that would basically turn your Windows 7 computer into Windows 7 Media Center. I don't even think that can connect to remote tuners. I think it expects it to be internal. Now, say there are Myth TV-like applications on Windows. I'm not going to say the name of any of them because I had very bad experiences with all of them. If you want to, just search for Myth TV alternatives for Windows, and you might find something, but I don't know a way to do it with Windows. Slingbox is the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I was going to suggest there might be a third piece of hardware he can put somewhere on that network to meet it. That way he doesn't need to install a tuner into one of his current boxes. But furthermore, Teddy, take a step back and ask yourself exactly what kind of media am I trying to pull in from this box? And then, if you can figure out a way to do it without a tuner card, then that might be a hurdle you're trying to overcome. Far too many times, especially when I was talking to customers or friends, I'm trying to help them with their setup, they have that one piece of hardware that they've already invested money in. They have that one piece of software they've already invested time in. Or they have, you know, this idea of how they, like, they read an article and they know they have to use this. But if you can find an alternative to that without going basically just keep an open mind, try to find alternatives without utilizing the hardware you have in place. Because if you think of large companies, you know, if you think about lock-in, you know, they've treaded the water so far, and they think, well, I have to keep going with this. If you can drop off a component of that, I mean, whether it be, you know, the Windows 7 boxes, whether you don't have to use Linux, it doesn't matter. The point is, you're trying to get this media, whether it be actual, you know, live streaming television or recording television, trying to make some sort of a DVR solution, whatever, in your home. Try to find an alternative using nothing that you already own, whether it be more expensive or less expensive, or something, or some other external device or piece of software that you can integrate into this that you haven't considered yet, especially with the Myth TV Windows alternatives that Dor suggested. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I would suggest him to do is to go to mythcast.com, Dan Fry, Pat Davila, I don't know of two guys who are more embedded into home theater computers. Jerry Jones at Android Buffet used to be, but when Windows 7 came out and they basically killed that, he basically said, well, I guess I'm not going to use anything now. Because what it seems like what Teddy wants is TV-like switching of live content. And I would just suggest mythtv.com, contact Dan and Pat. While they are both Linux guys, they're more multimedia guys. So if there's a way to do it, they'll be able to steer him down the exact right path. I don't want to, again, speak on something that I don't completely understand, because I don't know the way.
Yeah, the only other person I can think of contacting would be Chuck Litchfield, who's a listener, who's a listener who lives in close proximity that I've met in person, because I do that. I'm one of the hosts that actually does that. You're welcome. I can maybe ask him, because I know he's run a Media Center box in his home, and I don't know if it had a TV tuner card in it, but I know he talked about having a really big Media Center and then having something awful happen to it, which he's got to come on the show and talk about. Search for some other alternatives, and if you do find something, Teddy, please email us and let us know.
Yeah, or if you have a specific thing you heard about that you want us to comment on, we can definitely do that.
Definitely. All right. I have time for one more, and I'm going to have to call it a night here. Let me go back in. Oh, here we go. Yeah, okay, so William writes in. He says, hello, Cody and Dor. I was just listening to episode 129. I'm still behind. In that episode, you talked about OwnCloud. You mentioned that we should stop depending on Google and other large companies for OwnCloud storage. I don't know about you guys, but I know that the upload speeds on my internet are way too low to compare to Google Drive speeds. I would be all for using OwnCloud, but with the upload bandwidth that I have, it wouldn't be worth it. I have a Cincinnati Bell Fi Optics, which is 10 megabits a second down and 1 megabit a second up. Just thought it might be worth mentioning. Also, OLF was awesome this year. It was my first time, and Dor's talk on desktop environments was great. I am downloading Hybride now. William.
Thank you very much. I would say this. Don't think the limitation with OwnCloud is that you have to run it on your internal network. Technically speaking, if you want, you can get a web hosting plan or a VPS solution, which VPSs can be really cheap, and just host it yourself in the cloud, to where if you're hosting it on Dropbox, you're going to see the same slow downloads. But if you're remote, you'll get fast connections, just like on Dropbox. So don't think you have to have it in a house.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah. Really, the only hurdle of setting up a solution like that at home is, your internet speed. I would also ask yourself what you're utilizing Google Drive for now, as far as like the space for backups. If it's like constant, like everyday use, like, you know, backing up photos from your phone as you're snapping them, or day to day stuff, that's fine. But if it's just you want to do a backup like at night, well, if something takes you, you know, let's just throw it out there, like an hour on Google Drive, but it takes you 4 hours through OwnCloud. Well, if you're doing that while you sleep, then it doesn't matter.
True.
You're still taking care of business. So, yeah. So yeah, good luck with that one. I hope you find out. And Dor, do you have anything online as far as your OwnCloud setup and how you got that going?
Oh, I'm lazy. I downloaded turnkey Linux OwnCloud instance, put it on a computer, launched the VM, expanded the VM using Gparted, I want to say, Gparted. So I didn't have to do any work. I just booted it up, typed in the password I wanted it to be, typed in the information I wanted it to be. I said DHCP no, hard set of IP, and then I went in my router and I gave it the IP. Then I went on the router and I said to open the port. So I'm lazy. There are hosts, I'll say, that will have it available in cPanel as a one-click install.
Right.
But I'll say most hosts that are big and popular are against the use of OwnCloud because they want you to use your web server as a web server, displaying content to masses, not your personal online repository of files.
Mm. Okay. Well, that makes sense. But yeah, I forgot about your turnkey Linux setup that you had. Well, very cool. All right. Well, we're almost going to make it under an hour. This is crazy. Yeah, I do.
Insane.
I do have another commitment. I need
Are you
to go.
Sick?
No, I'm actually fine. I mean, good. Aside from...
I was afraid you had some bad yogurt.
No, actually, okay, funny story. You guys might know this. What, 2-3 months ago, maybe? I had an awful encounter with some Chobani yogurt. And yes, I will say that publicly. And
you can.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. And then the other day, I ate one accidentally. Well, I bought one at the store.
How do you accidentally eat one?
Hold on.
How did this get in my mouth?
If you really want the real answer for that, search for go to YouTube or to Harvard University and search for Dr. Ellen Langer, and she talks about she's written books on this called mindfulness. But basically, think of like when you're driving to work. And if you drive the same route every day, like there will be days where you just arrive at work, you're like, I don't remember the ride.
I did that today. When I left this morning, I distinctly remember not remembering going down this 3-mile stretch of road that I have to take every day. And I said to my wife, we did just go down there, right? And she said, mm-hmm. What are you talking about? I said, I literally don't remember if we did it, but we had to, right? She just said, I don't know about you sometimes. Welcome to my world.
Right. But no, I was at the store, I was just buying yogurt. I bought some Chobani yogurt for me and my son, and he was hungry, so we get out of the store. I take a knee, you know, have him on my knee. I bust out the little yogurt and the spoon I got from the Starbucks. I'm feeding him yogurt. I'm eating it. And then he and I share about a cup and a half, and I realize, oh, wow, I just ate some Chobani yogurt. But I didn't get sick.
Good.
So I guess they got their act together. Either that or the email that I didn't write did some good, and they changed their recipe. I don't know.
Right.
But, yeah, that's how I accidentally ate some yogurt that gave me food poisoning about 3 months ago.
Well, I'm happy you're okay now.
If you love yogurt, get the Chobani peach or the Chobani blueberry. Best stuff you've ever had. Just don't get sick. Don't get a bad batch of it. You will be, let's say you'll have some time off to do some reading.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there's a plus to that. Cool, Dor. All right. Well, hey, you know what? Thank you so much for the support. You yourself, Dor, I know that Martin and all the guys talked to me, some listeners contacted me via email wondering what had happened because I kind of just did fall off the face of the earth for a bit, but I'm in this for the long haul. I'm not quitting. I love podcasting. Dor knows, I was talking with on Voxer. I didn't know what Podnuts Meetup was until he started posting it, and then all of a sudden I got all itchy. He's like, man, if you just need to come on here and talk to him for like 5 minutes, just do it. And I was like, yeah, I'm going
to
do
it. Well, if you want to. That's one of the things. It's not mandatory for anyone to come out, but if you felt like you wanted to either talk about extracurricular stuff or stuff just not mm-hmm. related to this show, you can.
I'm going to, I think, well, if we're going to allow cursing on there to a certain extent, I think I'll push the boundaries as far as I can and see how long I can go on there without getting the hammer.
Josh, if you hear that, boot him right away.
Knuckle. Knuckle and I have a project going, which you're not privy to yet. So if you want to jeopardize that fella, go right ahead. There, Beardsley.
Oh,
bring it. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, man. Vicious, hey, vicious.
Hey, Dor, where can we find you?
Easiest place, podnos.com. Also, I'll say on Google Plus, it's phonetically spelled Stephen McLaughlin. Stephen McLaughlin. If you want to contact me directly, there are multiple ways. All you got to do is go and look. Podnos.com/contact is one of the easiest ways, seamless ways. If you are a utter fan of direct audio communication, I will say I am on a service called Voxer, which is iOS and Android. I would be shocked if it's, no, it is Windows. It is on Windows Mobile. But I don't think it's on BlackBerry. If you want to voice something to me, just send me an email and I'll tell you how to contact me on that. It's all cool. I'll just say one of the things I'm proud of myself in is that I try to have this network and myself be as transparent as possible. So anyone who wants to communicate with me can, and I will communicate back with them as well. You just got to say something, even especially if your name's Ken Fallon.
And that is our show for the week. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Do you sit on your butt all day? Are you tired of watching the weight pile on? Are you sick of what you see in the mirror and just too busy to do anything about it? The 28 Workouts Fitness Program was created with you in mind. Shed the weight and get into the best shape of your life. Workouts are only 25 minutes per day, no more than 4 days per week. No gym needed, no equipment needed. Instant download. Go to www.28workouts.com today for more details. Your time is now. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.